Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to The Conservative Cauldron, Bewitching Radio.
In light of recent developments, do you think Mitt Romney had a point when he said that Russia is America's biggest geopolitical foe? If not Russia, who?
The truth of the matter is that America's got a whole lot of challenges. Russia is a regional power that is threatening some of its immediate neighbors, not out of strength, but out of weakness. Ukraine has been a country in which Russia had enormous influence for decades, since the breakup of the Soviet Union. The fact that Russia felt compelled to go in militarily and lay bare these violations of international law indicates less influence, not more. Russia's actions are a problem. They don't pose the number one national security threat to the United States. I continue to be much more concerned when it comes to our security with the prospect of a nuclear weapon going off in Manhattan.
Because, well, yeah, that is a number one on every American's concern list, is a nuclear weapon going off in Manhattan. A good Friday evening to everybody. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm your host, Becky Noble. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out and chilling out with me tonight. TGIF to everyone, to all of my peeps. It has once again been a long, ugly week, but also, once again, we have arrived at the weekend, and it could not come soon enough. So, everybody, I'm glad you're all hanging out with me tonight. We got a ton of stuff here. I am loaded for bear, people. So you know what? Let's get into it, and we'll get through it all. That, of course, was just a clip from the nuclear summit this week that was in the Netherlands, and I hope that a lot of people would agree with me, at least on this. I think that it is a very interesting time period in which to convey the thought that Russia would not be considered a pretty credible threat to the United States at a time when everyone who is an expert on foreign policy, anyone in the know, given not only anything having to do with nuclear arms, nuclear disarmament, nuclear agreements around the world, not only that, but given all of the things that are going on in the Ukraine and Russia right now, that to make a statement like that is really kind of it, it It's what we've been saying for a couple of weeks now, is that the Obama administration is, they're projecting a lot of weakness, and they're projecting a lot of weakness at a very crucial time right now, when there is so much going on around the world, not just in Russia and the Ukraine, but, you know, pick a region around the world. And it's once again, it's bad timing on the administration's part. And you know, I think a lot of people too, myself included to a point, is that, and I heard this said today, that and I think a lot of conservatives maybe hold this opinion, that President Obama is not comfortable with America being a superpower, quite frankly. That's it in a nutshell. He's not comfortable with that concept, with that idea. And like I said, that clip was from the nuclear summit in the Netherlands this week on Tuesday. Most of the world's major leaders were there. It says, this is a report I have here from Reuters, and it says the United States and Russia, of course, set aside their differences over Crimea momentarily to take part in this summit. The other big powers there were included China, France, Germany, and Britain. And basically there's also 16 other countries there. It says Russia, China, and 16 other countries, I'm sorry, shunned a separate initiative of the United States and the Netherlands and South Korea at the summit to incorporate UN nuclear agency security guidelines into national rules. That, I think, I tend to think, and maybe I don't know enough about it really to comment here, but it's my show, so I'm going to anyway, that a lot of things that are included in those sorts of policies tend to border on the anti-American. So that's probably not a good idea. But the Dutch, who hosted the summit, called it a major step forward for a safer world. Let's see here. This is the first security summit that was in 2010. I'm sorry, here. It's been a long day, kids. Bear with me here. U.S. President Barack Obama said Ukraine's decision at the first nuclear security summit in Washington in 2010 to remove all of its HEU, which is plutonium, was a vivid reminder that the more of this material that we can secure, the safer all of our countries will be. And, you know, I think that's true. I mean, I think we all want a safer world, and we don't want people popping off nukes at the drop of a hat. So I'll go along with that. Also this year at this year's summit, Belgium and Italy announced that they had shipped out HEU and plutonium to the United States for downblending into less proliferation-sensitive material or disposal. Japan said it would send hundreds of kilograms of such material to the United States, which is probably a good thing, probably the best place to secure all of this material that is sort of scattered around the world would be here in the United States. A fourth meeting will be held in Chicago in 2016, returning the summit to the United States, where this process was also launched by President Obama. So that was that. It's a little bit here on the big nuke summit here. Analysts here, there's a few more things here. Analysts say that radical groups could theoretically build a crude but deadly nuclear bomb if they had money, technical knowledge, and fissile substances needed. And I think a lot of the fear here, and probably a good portion of the reason for this summit, behind this summit, is of course that nobody wants Al-Qaeda or related groups such as that to get their hands on any sort of nuclear material, because, God forbid, and you know, there's a real possibility right now that there could be an arms race in the Middle East that could form, and I'll get into that in a couple minutes, that could possibly happen given a few scenarios with what's going on in Russia and Ukraine. But I think the biggest fear here is groups like Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah, terrorist organizations like that, getting hold of these materials and making dirty bombs and somehow smuggling them into the United States. And that is a very real possibility, because I didn't remember this, and maybe a lot of you don't either, was that back in December, Mexican police found a truck that was stolen, and it had radioactive medical material in it. And even though it's used for medical purposes like that, you know, with a little, you know, tweaking here and there, you can use that material for just about anything you want. And so the threat of that kind of thing is very real, because this truck was just stolen by guys who wanted to steal a truck and had no idea what was inside this truck, what was in the back of it. And so that it's a very real threat. And I think that, like I said, I think the more control over the United States has over all of this material that really is kind of scattered around the world, I think it's a good thing. And so there was that, of course. Russia is not a big deal to the president, not a huge thing, not a big threat. We all remember during the 2012 presidential election when Mitt Romney and actually several other people other than Governor Romney did put forth the notion that one of the biggest geopolitical threats, if you will, maybe you don't want to use that word, the biggest geopolitical situations, if you want to be polite about it, would be Russia. And lo and behold, here we are. And so I think a lot of when this statement by Obama first came to light early this week, I think a lot of people looked at it as kind of a jab towards Mitt Romney. And you know, whether or not it was or it wasn't, who's to say? Who knows? But it sounded a bit what's the word I'm looking for? Childish, maybe. Not exactly the word I'm looking for, but it had a childish tinge to it. We'll just leave it at that. But also, while we are on the subject of Vladimir Putin and his buddy Barack Obama, and that we know that they are BFFs. Boy, just look at them when they're together. Today, actually, President Obama received a phone call from Russian President Vladimir Putin, and this was a discussion that went on while the president was traveling in Saudi Arabia, and the phone call lasted about an hour, and President Obama urged Vladimir Putin to pull troops back from where they are right now on the border with Ukraine. And Vladimir Putin, who initiated this phone call, put forth the notion that Ukraine's government is allowing extremists to intimidate civilians, and so that is the reason that these troops are on the border. You know, Vlad is Vlad, so you can take that at face value, and whether he is on the up and up, you know. And we may find out whether or not he's on the up and up here at some point. But this, like I said, this phone call lasted for about an hour, and whether it went in our favor, whether it went in Vladimir Putin's favor, it depends on who you talk to. White House officials described the call as frank and direct. This is a report from Newsmax, and said that Obama had urged Putin to offer a written response to a diplomatic resolution to the Ukraine crisis that the U.S. had presented. At this point, you know, I think that Obama and the United States, I think that we can put forth just about anything we want to put forth, and Vladimir Putin is going to laugh it off. Because, again, like I said at the beginning of the show, there has been so many things go on this week, whether it's this statement at the nuclear summit or anything involving the Ukraine and Russia right now, that there's so much inaction. And maybe this also doesn't, maybe it doesn't sound the way I want it to sound, but all of the action, all of the talk and no action is, and we don't need that. It's a very crucial time right now, and we don't need to be projecting weakness. the Kremlin described this phone call, said that Putin had drawn Obama's attention to a rampage of extremists in Ukraine and suggested that possible steps by the international community to help stabilize the situation in Ukraine. Well, I don't know that Vladimir Putin at this point has a lot of friends in the international community. We know probably that Iran and China are his friends. But the thing with that, though, too, is that they may actually be his friends, but a lot of Europe probably is not going to say anything about this because a lot of Europe is getting their oil from Russia, and they don't, quite frankly, they don't want to piss off Vlad. You know, that's the bottom line, because they're already paying $7 and $8 a gallon for gas in Europe, and so they're trying to stabilize things. But both nations said that Secretary of State John Kerry planned to meet with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov later on to discuss further steps. In a CBS News interview, Obama said that it was recorded before his phone call with Vladimir Putin, said Russia is amassing troops along the Ukrainian border under the guise of military exercises. Well, they're also amassing troops under the guise that Ukraine extremists are harassing citizens. And again, that may be depending on who you talk to, whether or not you talk to the citizens or you talk to troops amassed on the Ukraine on the border. But and again, President Obama says it may simply be an effort to intimidate Ukraine, or it may be that they've got additional plans. And that's one of the biggest things about this whole Ukrainian deal with Russia is that, and a lot of people are asking this question. Is this it? Is this the end? Does it end right here? Does Vladimir Putin take over the Crimean Peninsula and say, yeah, well, okay, I'm done now. I'm good. We'll leave everything the way it is. Or does he decide at some point that he wants more than just the Crimean Peninsula to be a part of Russia? You know, there's a lot of people saying that they think that he is, being a former KGB guy, that perhaps he is trying to revive the old Soviet Union. That remains to be seen. But it says here also, Putin's unexpected outreach to Obama came the same day that former Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych pushed for a vote to determine the status of each of the country's regions, a call serving the Kremlin's purpose of turning Ukraine into a loosely knit federation and raising the threat of more unrest in Ukraine's Russian-speaking eastern provinces. So again, there is some concern as to whether or not that this is the end for the taking of land. And like I said, I think a lot of people at this point, given Vladimir Putin's track record and given his history, is that I don't think that we can be sure of that. I'm going to hang on one second here. Hi, you're on Conservative Cauldron. I'm Becky Noble. Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Hi, Becky. Can you hear me all right?
I can. What's going on, bud?
Hey,
I was hoping you'd call me tonight. What's going on?
I'm listening to you talk about Vlad and the bozo and
oh, bozo and Vlad the Impaler.
Yeah, and you were talking about the Russia's excuse for massing the troops on the border and everything.
Right.
I was wondering if you found any instances in the past in history where someone else kind of did the same sort of thing.
That's true. That's true. You're right.
Do you have a name for that guy?
Does it begin with an H?
Yeah, I think it does.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, you know what? I think there are a lot of similarities here. And you know what the thing is, though, too, is that there's so many people, I think, that don't know that because nobody teaches history anymore, so they don't know that,
yeah.
You know?
That's a sad thing.
It is, and I, you know, God forbid that if something really, really bad happens, that, you know, there's going to be so many people going, well, we didn't know. Well, had you studied history, you would know. And
or they listen to this show.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. if they're going to learn a whole lot of history here, but oh, maybe they should. Maybe I can change things up a little, and you never know. So what else is going on?
Well, I'm just doing a little posting for the blog and watching video of the Prime Minister of the Ukraine and him going.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, let's remember the agreement in 1994 that Bill Clinton signed with great, great aplomb and said, hey, we're reducing nukes, blah, 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 and these guys are going to help us if we ever get attacked. Yeah, that's going right out the window here.
Yeah, that's kind of like Obamacare. How's that working out for you?
Oh, that's just terrific stuff.
Yeah. I know. I got all kinds of stuff here. I'm going to talk about that too. And oh man, I'm loaded tonight. So anyway, did you see my post the other day? We got 5 days to go before opening day. Get the rally squirrel ready.
Oh, okay. Sure. I'm ready to throw snowballs. I'm hoping for blizzards.
No blizzards in Cincinnati. That's not good.
It could happen.
Well, it could happen, yeah. It's probably, I think it's happened here once or twice on opening day. But
at least you're not in Chicago, because it will happen there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what did Rick, is it Bulow that's his last name? I don't want to get his last name wrong.
Yeah,
he was hoping for a Cubs and White Sox World Series.
well, he's a glutton for punishment.
Yeah, I think so too. But hey, if the Cubbies could actually beat Obama's team, I'd have to root for him. You know, I don't know.
Well, I would just do it as a National League team. I would root for him.
Oh yeah, absolutely, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Because that's what I grew up. But I'm more like Mr. Bailey. Although I'm still not going to get on that bandwagon because we'll see what happens here.
That's true.
October could have been a fluke.
That you never know. You never know. It's a long way off.
Yeah, well, you know, 182 games, that's a long time, so.
It's true. It is. But, you know, that's kind of like a national holiday here in St. Louis already, so.
Well, I understand. I have relatives out there, and they're like, yeah, okay. And I'm like, okay, cool. But, you know, as long as you can get, some Budweiser going, you're good to go.
There you go. Sure can. I can always get a little Budweiser going for before the baseball game. Sure.
Yeah, a little Bud, a couple hot dogs, and, what else is there? Oh,
and
you're not at work.
And you're not at work. Exactly, yeah. Exactly. What more do you need?
It's all good. It don't get much better than that, really. But where I'm at,
that's
we have
true.
None of that here. I'd have to drive 6 hours just to get to something like that. So it's not going to happen for me.
Oh, wow.
Well, yeah.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Just,
that kind of sucks.
Well, it is what it is. But there is the television. And
there you go.
You're getting the free Major League package for a week.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. Yeah. That sounds good. You got the TV and you got beer in the fridge. You're good to go.
Yeah. So
well, cool.
So you got enough talk about tonight, but I just heard you talking about. I was going, this is eerily similar to some other guy doing it, and he was a madman too.
It is.
So
it is.
I'm like
it
thinking,
really is,
let's remember this guy. He's deadly serious. He's not going to stop where he's doing. He's not going to stop in the Ukraine.
I don't think he is either. Why would he? Why would he just at this point just be like, okay, yeah, well I'm done now,
I'm so frightened.
I bet he's shaking in his boots, isn't he?
yeah, there really is. So I can see it now. He's not going to stop. It's going to take quite a bit to make him stop, and it ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
And let's just see what this really is. What's really going to have to happen here is the Europeans are going to have to step up and do something about it, because sitting on their hands is not going to work. And we know Obama's not going to do anything.
Oh no, he's not going to do anything. I think they're scared because they're afraid that he's going to cut the oil off, and they're already paying an arm and a leg for gas over there, and they don't want to pay any more. So I think that's what they're afraid of. So.
Oil for blood, huh? Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, something like, yeah, that sounds familiar too, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Oh,
I think,
man,
we've been here before. Yeah, history is repeating itself.
It is, and it's scary. It really is scary.
Yeah, each time it does,
wow,
it gets scarier. And then again, we
I
have
know.
This movie about the boat and the rain and the animals.
Yeah. I heard somebody say that is a big, huge environmental wacko movie. I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but that was
yes.
what I heard, that it was like a big gun.
Millions of years before Christ was born, we were destroying the earth.
Again, history repeating itself again. Oh, my God.
Oh, that's funny.
I can't keep up.
All right, buddy.
Oh, man.
Hey, good to talk to you.
Cool. I know. I'm so glad you called. Awesome.
I'm not a problem.
I'm sure I'll talk to you soon.
Very well.
Okay.
Have a great show.
Okay, thanks. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
That, of course, was Joe Hakos, my News Ninja 2012 brother-in-arms, partner-in-crime, whatever you want to call it. But real quick here, while we're still on the subject of Russia, I got a whole bunch of stuff here to get to. Donald Rumsfeld was on, I believe he was on Greta's show this week, maybe, earlier this week, and he had a little bit to say about the whole thing.
Is there sort of a way out of this? I mean, we're having this problem now where there's going to be an election soon. I guess that's, you know, the best option for the United States, that the United States gets someone that is friendlier?
He was friendly. Our relationship with Karzai and with Afghanistan was absolutely first rate in the Bush administration. It has gone downhill like a toboggan ever since the Obama administration came in. Now, take, for example, the fact that we have status of forces agreement probably with 100, 125 countries in the world. This administration, the White House and the State Department, have failed to get a status of forces agreement. A trained ape could get a status of forces agreement. It does not take a genius. And we have so mismanaged that relationship. And I think that he has tried to separate his harshness against the White House and the administration from the American people and the people that he appreciates have served in that country.
Mr. Secretary, thank you, sir, for joining us.
Gotta love Rummy. Rummy's telling it like it is. That's not necessarily Russia, Afghanistan, but you know, you can fill in the blank and put in any number of countries here, and there's failing at every end, and like Joe was saying too, and I agree with him that Vladimir Putin and those like him. You know, you could lump maybe Hamid Karzai in with it because that administration also is so corrupt that guys like them are not just going to stop at where they're at right now today. And if the United States is not going to step up and you know, then who? You know, possibly some of our allies. That's good, but at the end of the day, that's not the United States. But you know, that we'll have to see what happens with that. But also here, of course, in a few minutes here we got here before I got to go to a break, the search for the missing airliner is still ongoing for Flight 370. They have moved the search area here. The new search area is about 680 miles northeast of where the search area has been taking place. It is about four times as large. It is about, this is according to the Australian Maritime Safety Authority, covers four times as large as where the search team was looking on Thursday, expanding the area being covered from 48,500 square miles to 198,200 square miles. That's quite a jump. And they have some new leads, some new radar that has picked up what they believe to be debris floating in the ocean. The Australians really have really picked things up and ran with them recently. They're really contributing a lot to this search effort. It says here, this is from the Washington Post. On Monday, a Thai satellite spotted at least 300 floating objects in the southern Indian Ocean, where authorities say the plane went down almost 3 weeks ago. Now, there are still people who are not convinced that the plane has gone down. It seems to be more and more of a reality, but, you know, this whole plane thing, and I'm going to be writing about this next week at News Ninja 2012. Please check it out. It's not done yet. It's in the works. I'm still in the creative process, but it will be worth the wait. Trust me. Let's see. The images were taken by the Geoinformatics and Space Technology Development Agency. That is a Thai space research agency, and shows objects more than 1,600 miles southwest of Perth, Australia, that radar has picked up. They do not know as yet if this is, in fact, from the Malaysian airliner. The items were as small as 6.5 feet and as long as 52.5 feet. They were seen about 124 miles from where the French satellite picked up the first group of about 100 objects earlier this week. And, you know, also here, the black box containing cockpit audio, flight data recorder, that sort of thing, still has to be found. And, again, with the problem that in this area of the ocean that is so remote and so deep, that I don't think it's at least, I think I saw somewhere today measurements of at least a mile and a half, maybe almost 2.5 miles down. It's that, and you cannot send human beings into that environment, and so they're gonna be using a lot of equipment here, a lot of technology to hopefully find this plane and find out what happened and find any sorts of any. I don't think we're going to find any human beings at this point, but maybe any sort of belongings or just any scrap of anything that maybe will bring some closure to these families. But I've gone a little long here because I'm so glad that my buddy Joe called. It's always cool when he calls in. I love it. But I'm going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little Obamacare. We're going to talk Hobby Lobby. And I got a couple little odds and ends. So hang around. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. Thanks for listening.
Oh,
We're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm your host, Becky Noble. TGIF, my people, we have finally made it to the weekend. Thanks for hanging out and chilling out with me tonight. While we're talking sedation, I guess we should also talk Obamacare now, shouldn't we? The latest in the saga that is Obamacare, the latest in the train wreck, the nightmare that is Obamacare, has been delayed once again. Has not been delayed by Republicans or conservatives. Oh, no, it has been delayed by the Obama administration. And here's just a little snippet of that.
Now, Monday was supposed to be the official deadline to sign up for health care, but the White House has come up with another extension, at least for those already in the process of applying. But critics say this is another example of the White House making up the rules as it goes along. A new Kaiser tracking poll shows us that fewer than 40% of uninsured Americans between the ages of 18 and 64 are even aware of next week's deadline. Phil Schillero is the White House point person for the health care rollout. Thanks very much for being with us. According to the Washington Post, Phil, there is still no timetable for how long this extension will continue. Can you explain what the rules of the road are going to be going forward?
Sure. And I want to make clear to folks, this is not an extension. This is aimed at people who are in the system trying to complete their process, but for whatever reason may not do it. So we're giving people a couple of extra days if they haven't completed the application, if they're having problems getting with healthcare.gov, just to finish the process.
So how is that not an extension?
Well, let me flip the other way, Andrew. If we had people who at midnight on Monday had finished three quarters of their application or were having trouble getting back into the call center because of volume, we'd be criticized that we've cut off those people from getting insurance. We're letting people complete the process. That's common sense. So we would do it in any other situation. It makes sense to do it here.
Help explain this honor system where people will simply explain that they're already in the process and what the reasons were.
Right.
How is that working?
So it's self-attestation. And again, the reason I say this is so silly, it's hard for me to believe there's anybody in America right now sitting in their living room saying, I'm not going to fill out an application today. I'm not going to call 1-800-318-2596 today. I'm going to wait until Wednesday so I can scam the system. Nobody's doing that. So what we found in December is that people, there was a large volume right at the end. People needed a little more time to work through the process. I'll give you one example. Just this week, the first 3 days of this week, more than 1 million people have called the call center. Yesterday, 1.5 million, more than 1.5 million came to the website. There's tremendous demand. This is a very popular thing for people. We want to make sure everyone who's trying to get insurance has the opportunity to complete the process.
Now, the original target, many people have said, was 7 million. I know you have said that was not anything that you said, but
right.
7 million by the 31st. You had more than 5 million. How close are you going to get to that target?
I don't want to give numbers, Andrea, but let me just say that we're feeling very, very good. With the demand, the number of people signing up, I think we're going to be over 6 million. I think we'll be well over 6 million.
Now, after the meeting with Pope Francis today, the president also met with the Secretary of State of the Vatican, and the issue came up about revisiting what the objections from the Conference of Bishops to the mandate for contraception. Is there going to be any intent by the White House to cut back on the mandate for contraception, which, as you know, this week alone was a big issue with the Hobby Lobby and other plaintiffs at the Supreme Court?
Well, you know better than anyone, I really shouldn't be talking about the Supreme Court case because that's ongoing litigation and it's a Justice Department.
I just mean
Department.
In terms of policy, White House policy.
Policy, I think we'll talk with the president when he gets back. I can't prejudge that, but I don't have any indication we would revisit it.
Thank you very much, Phil Schillero. Thanks on a busy day for coming out to the lawn for us.
You bet. Thank you, Andrew.
Appreciate it.
So, if you have just now... let's see, when was the rollout of Obamacare? That was back in October. So if it's taken you since October to figure out how to turn your computer on and how, you know, yeah, there were all the problems with the website in the beginning and all that, but if it has taken you this long to figure out how to turn on your computer and to get to the website and then, you know, you kind of sat there for a couple minutes trying to figure out what to do next, what do I click on, where do I go, do I push a button, what taken you this long, well, the Obama administration is here to help. And what they want to do I'm from the government, and I'm here to help. We'll have a quiz later. Who said that? It was Ronald Reagan. They're here to help you by pushing back the deadline to enroll in government health care. We can call it Obamacare. We can call it the Affordable Care Act. It's government health care. Kind of like government cheese, it's government health care. The deadline was Monday, March 31st. It has now been moved back at least to 2 weeks. Well, let's do a little math here, kid. Let's do a little common core math, more than likely. What that is, if you move that 2 weeks, well, what happens approximately, maybe not exactly, approximately 2 weeks from March 31st? That's right. You guessed it, tax day, which is probably all very appropriate that the whole conglomeration, the whole cluster, the whole mess would be all happening around April 15th. So that's for those of you who are just having such a hard time, and you're right smack in the middle, you're right smack in the middle of the process of signing up for Obamacare. Well, once again, the Obama administration has swooped in to help you. Isn't that a wonderful thing? Isn't government a wonderful thing? Isn't an overabundance of government? Also, in that clip that you just heard with Andrea Mitchell, she did refer to the Hobby Lobby Supreme Court case this week. And that is, I don't think that we are going to have heard the end of such cases. I think this is the first of many. And basically what is happening here is that the Supreme Court here is being, well, they're being asked to decide whether or not can a corporation, can they sort of act in the same sense that an individual would act in the fact that they would have religious beliefs and that they would run their company and provide health care for their employees based on those beliefs? Are they allowed to do that? Is a corporation just a emotionalist, a lifeless entity in and of itself that is not run by individuals? It's going to be a very interesting ruling. The ruling will probably not come down until late June, but the case was heard this week, and it says on the one side is the Hobby Lobby Arts and Crafts chain. There's also another company involved here, the Conestoga Wood Specialties Cabinetry, which is owned by Mennonites. And they are arguing that the healthcare law it argues that the landmark 2010 healthcare law gives women a statutory right to choose among 20 methods of birth control. Now, the problem is that they are not saying that they will not provide contraception for their female employees. There are about four or five different things here that are in a class of drugs called abortifacients. And what that is that these drugs would either intentionally or unintentionally abortion is a very, very real risk, a very real possibility if these drugs are taken. And it's interesting, actually, Justice Elena Kagan and Justice Sonia Sotomayor really had some of the most intriguing questions this week based on that. You know, whether or not it's because they're women, you know, I honestly don't think so. I think that they really they asked some tough questions. For instance, Elena Kagan took up the government's case from the bench, avowing that the family's religious convictions were beyond doubt, but she suggested that exempting them from the law would open the door to exemptions for a slew of employers who didn't want to cover a host of medical services. Okay, she has asked that question on behalf of the government. Paul Clement, who is a lawyer for the companies, countered that, well, first of all, Kagan suggested that the corporate owners have a choice other than breaking the law and betraying their religious principles. It's an option, she said, that nobody talks about. Hobby Lobby could choose not to provide insurance. Under the health care law, the company would have to pay a tax instead, but it would be comparable to the cost of insurance. Paul Clement, the lawyer for the companies, argued that such a tax would better be described as a penalty, and that the corporations would suffer for it, having to raise wages to compensate for their lack of a health care plan. And not only that, but there would be a huge monetary you know, outpouring on behalf of these companies if they were to pay these fines. Solicitor General Donald Verrilli, who argued the government's case, tried to poke holes in Clement's position by first questioning whether the companies have a right to sue in the first place. He argued that a corporation does not have religious rights. Some would argue that a corporation is made up of people who do have religious rights in this country. And so it's going to be very interesting to see here what happens with this case. Again, it will not be ruled on until late June. And again, I don't think this is not the last of it, because this act, this healthcare law, opens up this whole can of worms with cases like this based on contraception, based on abortion providers, things of that nature that could possibly go against people's religious beliefs. And it's one of the founding principles of our country. And are we going to is that going to go by the wayside? Because if it does, we're in serious trouble, people, because this is the reason that we're here. This is the reason that people came here. And if we're willing to sacrifice this, it's very serious. We are more far gone than I think a lot of us believed. If this is sacrificed, if it's thrown by the wayside. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens with that. Also this week, you know, the left likes to talk about the war on women, the war on minorities, the war on gay people. There's always a war on somebody. Well, the one war that they don't like to talk about is the war on black conservatives. And I've got a couple stories here. One of them here is from our buddy Wayne Dupree over at News Ninja 2012. Hey, Wayne, woohoo! Shout out to Wayne and all my News Ninja peeps. I'm sure Joe would second that. This week there was sort of a Twitter war going on between Jamila Lemieux. She is an editor, a senior editor at Ebony Magazine, and Rafi Williams, who is the deputy press secretary for the Republican National Committee. He's a young man. His father is someone you might know. His father is Juan Williams, who is a Fox News contributor. Jamila Lemieux made some rather derogatory remarks about Rafi Williams, and it's not so much maybe what she said, but it was the intent and the tone that you could take from these postings that was a little disturbing. There was some talk on Twitter how it all began, I believe, and I could be wrong, was that there was a discussion of how black conservatives are treated. And I could be sketchy on how this whole started, but when Rafi joined the conversation, I think one of her exact tweets, maybe not exactly, but to the best of my ability here, I'm going to say what she basically said was, "Oh no, here comes the white dude." Kind of like, "Oh no," you know. And it was kind of degrading. It was kind of disrespectful. And a lot of people, Republican National Committee Chairman Reince Priebus, called for an apology. A lot of people called for an apology to Rafi Williams for this really derogatory tweet. And basically what it is was that she helped the argument. She helped the argument along of how black conservatives are treated. It was another in a long line of shining examples of how black conservatives are treated. And since then, this went on earlier this week. Here it is. Yes, she is a senior editor for Ebony Magazine, and just kind of said, "Oh, here comes the white dude," and kind of talked down to him as if it were beneath her. Ebony Magazine has since apologized to Rafi for this series of really disturbing and really nasty and mean tweets. And but we have no apology as yet from Jamila Lemieux. And you know, whether or not she will do that is we'll see if she will or not. But the other thing here is and I want to go back to Hobby Lobby here for a second. See, I got so much going on here tonight. I got so much stuff to share. I'm all over the place. I can't help it. I'm sorry. But The other thing here, also, while we are talking about the war on black conservatives, because let's face it, that's what it is. It's not the war on women. It's not the war on gays. It's not the war on minorities. It's the war on black conservatives. That is where the war is. And earlier this week, basketball star Kobe Bryant he gave a interview to a magazine here, and he gave an interview to the New Yorker magazine, and basically, what happened here is he was asked about the Trayvon Martin George Zimmerman case, as if we can't let that sleeping dog lie. And I didn't know this about Kobe Bryant because I don't follow basketball, but Kobe grew up in Italy. His father was also a basketball player and played over in Italy for a number of years. Kobe lived there when he was six, and his family moved back to the States, moved back to Philadelphia, I believe when he was a teenager. And so he was talking about how hard it was, you know, being someone who had grown up, had spent a lot of his formative years overseas in a foreign country, is no doubt very fluent in Italian, and having come back as a teenager to the United States and trying to fit in to culture and fit in with not just American society, but fit in with fellow African Americans. And so he was asked about this case, and he said, and it's really good for him, he said, "I won't react to something just because I'm supposed to, because I'm an African American. That argument doesn't make any sense to me. So we want to advance as a society and a culture, but say if something happens to an African-American, we immediately come to his defense, yet you want to talk about how far we've progressed as a society. Well, we've progressed as a society, then don't jump to somebody's defense just because they're African-American. You sit and you listen to the facts just like you would in any other situation, right? So I won't assert myself." And you know what? Good for Kobe. Good for him for speaking his mind and saying what he thinks and saying what he feels. I think that's great. You know, I mean, he nailed it. He's right on the money. Why does it automatically come down to, well, I'm going to back this guy or I'm going to back that guy because they're black, because they're white, because whatever, based on skin color? That he's right. It's a ridiculous notion. You look at the facts of the case and then you take it from there. Well, apparently that was not good enough for some people. Kobe took a lot of heat for this this week. And several people came out, and let's see, Najee Ali, director of Project Islamic Hope, angrily called for a boycott of all things Bryant because, yeah, that'll be a big help. And let's see, there was also, I believe, something that came from former football star Jim Brown, who said, and actually that was the statement, and I'm going to paraphrase this, really was kind of, it was patronizing, and it was again, really kind of mean and nasty. And again, here is an American citizen, a free American citizen, free to think and to think what he wants to think and say what he wants to say, and he's vilified by people who think that he should just walk the party line and say, oh, well, I'm black, therefore I need to think A, B, C, and D all the way down the line. It's just, it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life. But Jim Brown came out, I believe, and said that Kobe just didn't understand American culture. Well, because he didn't grow up here. So he just didn't understand African-American culture. And you know what that statement says to me? Not only is it patronizing. It says to me that well, Jim just doesn't think that Kobe's black enough. Really? I didn't realize there was a scale. I'm going to have to, you know, I'm going to sound a little stereotypical here myself and talk to my air quote black friends and see just how black you have to be, because apparently there's a scale. Who knew? But I applaud Kobe. He did come out with a tweet later on saying that he was in support of Trayvon and had not in any way shown any support for George Zimmerman, really had not didn't have any skin in the game and really didn't give an opinion one way or the other, but that wasn't good enough for some people. So the war on black conservatives goes on, people, and I think it's going to be up to us as conservatives, as conservative conservatives. Doesn't matter what color you are. Doesn't matter where you came from. It doesn't matter what religion you are. It's going to be up to us to call out the people who are waging the war on black conservatives. It's going to be up to us to call them out on it, because they're going to think that they're going to get away with it, and in a lot of venues they are. But we have to make sure that in as many venues as possible that they don't get away with it. Anyway, now that I am done with my rant, I need to go back to the Hobby Lobby case here for just a minute. We're going to play just a little bit of sound here from the people. Sorry to be jumping around here, people. But again, I'm so busy. I got so many things to do that I want to share with you that we have to play this. So this is just a little bit of the sights and sounds from the Supreme Court hearing on the case this week.
I can't believe we're still fighting for this right so many years after birth control came about. It seems like we're way back in the 60s and the 70s again, and I just want to make sure that corporations are treated as corporations and not as people, so that everyone's religious liberty and religious freedom is defended, regardless of your religion and regardless of your form of birth control.
Well, we believe that real health care should respect life, and what this case is really about is courts and business owners who have sincerely held beliefs that life begins at conception to fund abortion-causing drugs against their will. And that's against the American dream. It's against all the principles of freedom of conscience and freedom of liberty and freedom of religion that we hold so dearly in this country. And that's why you see so many Americans out here today, because this is an issue impacting real Americans, and we cannot live in a country that forces people to participate in activities that they find morally reprehensible.
Well, obviously, I am hoping that the religious people will not have the right to impose their religious beliefs on anyone else. Certainly, a corporation per se has no religious beliefs, and it is just absolute and complete bigotry to imagine that they would have the right to propagate their religious views on health care to anyone else.
I'm hoping that there'll be a victory for the freedom, for true freedom in America. The Obamacare HHS mandate persecutes Christians and Catholics, forces them to violate their consciences, and that's something that you'd expect in a communist country, not in the United States of America.
Absolutely. Right on, brother. And did you ever, have you noticed that the left, they so want free speech to say what they want to say and say what they think, but if there's someone with an opposing viewpoint, boy, they're right behind them chanting to make sure that it's all drowned out. Anyway, on a rather sad note here, I'm going to end here. Gosh, maybe I've been a little depressing tonight. I'm so glad Joe called. Anyway, anybody who is my age, and I'm not going to say exactly how old that is, let's say late 40s, anybody who remembers coming home from school and watching the old Batman TV series from the 60s, well, I am sad to report to you tonight that Lorenzo Semple Jr., who was the brains behind that whole TV series and wrote the screenplay for the 1966 movie, the Batman movie, died today at age 91. And he was also, this is the part about it, remember the old, when the fight scenes would come on and there was pow and kabow and blam, Lorenzo Semple Jr. did that, and he will be greatly missed. And we are so happy that he brought us Batman, because that was the after-school place to be for me as a kid and many of people of my generation, and we turned out pretty good. On that note, that is it for me tonight. I am very glad that you all came and hung out and chilled out with me tonight on a Friday night. Thanks for joining me tonight. Please check out News Ninja 2012, WayneDupree.com. All of my fellow News Ninja people are there with great articles, great pieces to read. Please go there. You can find me at conservativecauldron.blogspot.com, where it all began. Also, please look for me on Facebook.com/BeckyNoble and at Twitter at PatriotWitch. Once again, I think I have covered it all. Once again, I want to thank everybody for stopping by tonight. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. I will see you next time. Thanks for listening.
tired of